This is a Pinball News production.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for the introduction, Rob, and your wife, Bridget. Mike, thank you for asking me to be here. It's actually my honor this evening. The show to me is amazing. It seems that there is a cast of thousands seemingly putting this show on. And tonight, I get to speak just a little bit about something that we all have a passion for, pinball. And also, I'm lucky that tonight I get to see some of my friends that I only maybe get to see once a year. Lloyd Olson, I haven't seen you in a long time. And Shelly Sachs, I love you, honey. And Greg Davis and a few of the other guys and girls. So thank you. I wanted to take a few moments at first to give you a little slice of who I am. You could probably tell by my accent, I'm not from Chicago. I'm from Brooklyn. I grew up there. And those not knowing Brooklyn might think it's this place, you know, as Rodney Dangerfield would say, you know, I grew up in a tough neighborhood. One time I was pressing my hand into some wet cement, and another hand pressed back. You know, so I don't want to say I grew up in a rough neighborhood, but they serve broken leg of lamb on the menu of a restaurant. So really, it's a magical place with a lot of magical people and a lot of great food, and it was a melting pot of a lot of ethnic groups. And growing up, it was a lot of fun. I didn't get a chance to play pinball as a kid. It seemed I was a good kid for the most part, and maybe all the pinball machines were at the back of pool halls and candy stores and things like that. Typically, I played in the street and played football, touch football. I was a little kid and I was fast, and if they gave me the ball, I ran with the ball and made a touchdown. And they called me Weasel, so that was a big funny thing that went through my whole life for a long time. What I also did was play every kind of sport, because obviously there were no video games. Today kids are very stimulated and they have all kinds of electronic things on them. So perhaps pinball to them is not something that they look at. They look at it as maybe a game that is old-fashioned, and they're into more electronic high-tech things. When I graduated high school in way back in 1975, I wanted to take a few months off before going to college. And my electronics teacher, Mr. D'Amico, kind of begged with me and pleaded with me not to do that, because he said I wouldn't go to college once I started working, that I'd get a taste of the money and I wouldn't go back. And I kind of, in my life, I've done a lot of things that I decided I wanted to do, no matter what some people gave me advice for. Sometimes they worked out and sometimes they didn't. And I decided to go get a job, and I answered an ad in the newspaper, and I really didn't care what I was going to do, which is kind of unusual for me. It was an ad for a shipping clerk, and I took a train about an hour ride downtown Brooklyn. I got off the train, I walked to the place, and I was able to type with two fingers, which I still do today on my iPad now, and still my computer. I'm pretty fast, but my daughter has surpassed me. She's faster than me doing it the real way. So the guy that interviewed me, he liked me. Why not? What's not to like, I guess? I was qualified for the job. All I needed was somebody that was breathing and maybe could type out some shipping forms. He asked me, after he kind of hired me, he said, so what do you really want to do in your work career? And I didn't give that a lot of thought. You know, I was like 17 years old, and I said, you know, I want to do something with electronics. He said, okay. So he walked me over to this radio on the shelf, and he turned the radio on, and then he turned the radio off, and then he said to me, that's the most electronics you're going to do here. I said, thank you. I appreciate meeting you. And we both knew that was not in my future, and I left. So on my ride home back on the subway, wondering what I'm going to do, kind of like with the rest of my life, and saying maybe I should have gone to school, and school was starting in a few days. There was a newspaper on the train folded up, and I grabbed the newspaper, and I started, there was nobody really on the train. I grabbed the newspaper, and I was going through it, and there was an ad for a pinball mechanic. I said, what is a pinball mechanic? I mean, I know what a car mechanic is, but what's a pinball mechanic? So when I got home, you know, there were really no cell phones. When I got home, I was living with my folks in Brooklyn. I made a call. The next day, I was back on a train in Manhattan. And long story short, I got a job with a company called JEPCO Amusements. And they were a company that operated game rooms throughout the New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania metropolitan area, and colleges of all places, right where I should have been. And it was really all electromechanical pinball machines in September 5th, 1975, when I started. And it was a lot of fun. The first time I really looked in a mechanical, electromechanical pinball machine, this old guy, Heinz Magdalinsky, was my boss, and he was doing this for about 30 years at the time. And he pulled open the hood, and I looked at that, and I wanted to say, holy crap, but I didn't, because I thought that wouldn't be a good thing to say. And I kind of winged it with him. And I learned, he taught me how to fix electromechanical pinball machines. My work ethic was there. I knew that whatever I would do, if I was going to shovel garbage, I was going to be the best garbage shoveler that there was going to be, because my passion would be in that job. So really, after I would go to these arcades, these game rooms, there were kids there my age, and it was kind of strange because I went to all these colleges. I went to Columbia University and Pace and Downstate Medical Center and all these places fixing games, and I was kind of like a hero when I got to the locations because all the kids are there, whether they're hanging out or cutting out or whatever they were doing. I'd open the game and I'd fix it and make sure it worked, and I would give them credits on the games to make sure everything was working. And I knew that if those games worked the right way, they would make money because they were designed a certain way. And Heinz, being how he was, he taught me every single screw in every single game was important because, you know, Jack, if they drop a screw and we don't have it, they would not have had the screw in the game. They would have saved money. So I learned this, and sometimes we fix games in 2 minutes and drop the screw and took 20 minutes to find the screw, tipping over the game and kicking the bottom and all that kind of stuff. As it was, I stayed with that company a while. It got sold. Years passed. I was able to buy pinball machines and video games, and I became a street operator with several hundred games throughout New York in the good times when we didn't even have time to count money. We used to weigh it, so I still kind of remember that, you know, 100 bucks and quarters is 5 pounds. So that's the kind of money those games would make. I had games go out of order that filled up with money, and it was an amazing time. It was a golden era, I guess. The good thing was, all the years that I was doing it, there were good years and there were bad years. And I know in our sister industry, in the carnival industry, they say, today we eat the chicken and tomorrow we eat the feathers. And what I did was I made sure that while I had an entrepreneurial spirit, I didn't get really too over my head with anything. I made sure that, because my dad is an accountant, I made sure I built a company that was stable. I put my name on it, Jack Guarnieri Service Company, because my grandfather, when he came to the U.S., he was the first Pepsi-Cola distributor in New York City, and he put his name on the company. And I knew if I did that, I would always do the right thing. I only have one name, and it was important as a sense of pride and as a sense to do the right thing. You know, I never worked a day, and it's a silly kind of admission. You know, I never worked a day in these 36 years because every single day, I've been blessed to do what I really love to do. So to me, if somebody was working, it was the guy outside with a jackhammer busting up the street to fix a water pipe. He was working. But I wasn't working because I was in the amusement industry. We didn't work. Actually, a lot of my friends that went on to become doctors and lawyers and industry bigwigs and CEOs of Fortune, you know, 500, 100 companies were kind of jealous of me. You got the best job, you know? And I do have the best job because it's not a job. Much has been said and written about where pinball is today as a hobby for collectors, players, and a viable piece of equipment for operators. It is because of operators' purchases that pinball existed in the distant past. I'll tell you because I know, without sales of new pinball machines to home customers, collectors, enthusiasts, these past several years, there would be no pinball companies in business today. You have been the people that have kept pinball alive, and tonight I thank you for that. As players, you know what you love about a certain pinball machine. I love to play my Cyclone because it's a single ball game and I can make it do some really cool things, and I kind of like to ride the Ferris wheel, and I love all the sounds that it makes with the elephant and everything like that on my Buckaroo. I love to hear the bell if I can get it to ring, and I watch the horse kick the rodeo clown around the circle and make it spin, and when I get that 1,000 point light to light up, I think like I really accomplished something. I worked really, really hard to do that, and I feel great. When I play my Simpsons pinball party, I still try to get it to do things that I can't get it to do. Keith, I don't know what the heck he did with the rule set, but I still can't get it to do everything it's supposed to do. Maybe he can teach me that. My Rocky and Bullwinkle, when I play that, I get dizzy with all the ramps and all the shots. My Family Guy at home, I love that game because not only the theme, and my son loved the theme too, Jack, but I like that little mini play field with that little ball, and it's a really cool game. And, you know, it's mechanical, and things that are mechanical for me, I just have a certain love for, and that, I think that's part of pinball. And, you know, these pinball machines, whether they're in my house or I come to a show like this, they're kind of like old friends. I got to play Wizard, and that was a game that was the first game I bought as a commercial operator. I was in a swim club in Brooklyn, and it plays really great. And I got to play Flash again, and great game. It took me back to when I operated it in a bowling alley in 1979, and that was a lot of fun. And playing those games for me, and I'm sure for us, takes us back to a different time. It kind of transports you to a magical place. It's almost like when you hear a song, and or maybe you smell something, and you think of maybe a time that was better. We know these are the good old days, but that's kind of what it does for me, and I think it does that for a lot of people. Everyone has an opinion, we know, and they have certain something else that I'm not going to mention. And that's what makes things popular, cool, hip, cutting edge. As an operator, and I'm an operator of games, the only thing that really matters to me, and if I boil it all down, is what happens in the cash box and the bill acceptor. Okay, because if that fills up, then I know I have a good game. And I really need to pay attention to what my customers think, because that's how they're voting, based on how much gameplay I get. Over the ages, people in business have said many things publicly that were proven to be wrong, including me. I try never to say never, but sometimes I do. Hopefully, in my thought process, I'm going to be a lot smarter tomorrow than I am today. Some people have said that pinball would die one day, too. And I believe that's wrong, and I'm sure everybody in this room does agree with me on that. Some other pearls of wisdom that people have made in business. There is no reason anyone would want a computer in their home. Ken Olson, president, chairman, and founder of Digital Equipment, 1977. Everything that can be invented has been invented. Charles H. Duhl, commissioner, U.S. Patent Office, 1899. Who the hell wants to hear actors talk? That was Harry M. Warner, Warner Brothers in 1927. This telephone has too many shortcomings to be seriously considered as a means of communications. The device inherently has absolutely no value to us. Western Union, internal memo, 1876. I don't know if anybody's seen Western Union lately. We don't like their sound, and guitar music is on the way out. Decca Recording Company, rejecting the Beatles in 1962, the greatest band of all time. And here's the last one. This is a quote. So we went to Atari and said, hey, I've got this amazing thing, even built with some of your parts. And what do you think about funding us? Or we'll give it to you. We just want to do it. Pay our salary. We'll come work for you. And they said no. So then we went to Hewlett-Packard. And they said, hey, we don't need you. You haven't got through college yet. Apple Computer Incorporated founder Steve Jobs, on attempts to get Atari and HP interested in his and Steve Wozniak's personal computer. Amazing. Amazing, amazing, incorrect observations and decisions. The late Steve Jobs was one of my business heroes. He was not perfect. He failed many times in different areas of his life, and he was counted down and out. He was disregarded. He found ways to reinvent himself and businesses that went on to create products that changed the world. He was not interested primarily in money, believe it or not, and did not set out to be the richest man on earth or in the cemetery. He had passion. He didn't give up, even to the end. He did what he loved to do with people he wanted to do it with. I certainly cannot compare myself to Steve Jobs. Although, I give him a small tribute tonight by wearing his signature Croft and Barrows shirt. Thank you, Drew. What I'm saying here is that we as a community of people who love pinball, in a broader sense, love the industry that creates pinball, and we are compelled to do what we can to make it grow. Here I am in the center of a brand new company that has orders for slightly more than 1,000 new games that nobody played, nobody saw, and people are paying for. In the middle of one of the greatest economic downturns in recent history, millions of dollars are being put to work to engineer, design, create, and manufacture the first product that has launched a new company and a new chapter in pinball. By the way, Steve Jobs and I have another thing in common. Neither one of us graduated from college. We don't have a diploma, either one of us, and it really hasn't hurt me. The future belongs to all of us, just as pinball belongs to all of us. Each one of us are linked together by a common silver ball rolling around the top of a piece of wood, hitting plastic, metal, and rubber, which excites our senses. The competitive nature of the game in a primitive battle against the machine, as well as other players, coupled with the sense of urgency, despair, and delight, mingles with fleeting accomplishment and a feeling that anything is possible if only I make this shot. It's really a high. It's just like life. There is skill involved and a lot of practice, but there is an element of luck too. Most of all, it is fun, and there's nothing like it for the price anywhere on earth. Inevitably, like death and taxes, the ball will drain and the game will end. But at the push of a button, I get to live again. I have a chance to beat this thing, to achieve greatness, to tell the world that I am somebody who beat the game. I am a pinball player, and I am special because I don't give up. I'm ready to shoot again. Be that pinball player in your life and in everything you do. Do the very best you can at school, at your work, in your life as a parent, and as a child, and as a friend. If you think about it, we are all pinballs rolling around on the playfield of the earth, bouncing into plastic, metal, and rubber. Make sure that you, before you hit the out lane and the game is over, that you have achieved the highest score possible. Maybe you will then be known as the great pinball wizard of life. Thank you all, and may God bless all of you. And one last thing, one of my newest friends taught me this last night in an elevator, going upstairs to my room at like 1:30 in the morning. So Fred, this is for you.